Hey, it's Wednesday, September 23rd. I am Brandon Molesky. He's Pat Micheletti, and this is another episode of Beyond the Pod. We really appreciate you listening on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcast, or watching us on the KFAN YouTube channel. And Beyond the Pod is brought to you by SodaStick and Culturama. And Pat, we're lots of Minnesota Wild news within the last week or so. So we're now joined by the analyst, television analyst for Fox Sports North and former Minnesota Wild player Ryan Carter. Ryan, really appreciate your time for joining us today. And we do have a lot of Wild stuff to get to, but before we get to that, because I do a little research on our guests, I didn't even realize you were a Mr. Hockey finalist in 2002, but you did not win. You lost out to Geno Guyer. There was always people complaining that the Gophers got favorable treatment from the right. Mr. Hockey. So given you didn't win, David Backus didn't win that year, do you believe that because you weren't a Gopher, you didn't win Mr. Hockey?
Boy, I wish I could go back. No, I do believe because I wasn't a Gopher, I didn't win, but it's not because I think Gopher people vote the wrong way. I think the Gophers got the best players out of the state, and at the time, Geno Guyer was the best player. So that was bad. I feel a little back in those 2002. The high school hockey landscape has really changed since then. Back then, still, it was the Gophers had the pick, and it was really whoever was the best player in the state at that time, whether it was a forward, defenseman, they were going to go to the Gophers. And now I don't know that that's the case. You've got players in junior leaving and everything. So, but certainly back then, no, Geno Guyer was the best player in Minnesota, in my opinion. I think he deserved it.
Hey, Ryan, you ended up at Minnesota State. I'm always curious, what other schools did you consider along with Minnesota State?
Okay, so the way it went for me, I always wanted to play in the WCHA. I wanted to play at home. I grew up wanting to be, quite frankly, I wanted to play for the Gophers. Duluth, I had talked with Duluth, letters and things from other schools around St. Cloud. Then you go out east, and some of the schools out east were knocking on my door. But I wasn't all that interested in going out east. I wanted to play here. Right. Colorado College had sent some letters, Norm Bazin, guys like that. But for me, right off the bat, and the way my visits went, Mankato's like, hey, come on a visit. I went on my visit, and they're like, we really like you. We want to bring you in. Here's the deal, and we need to know in a week. And I was comfortable. Yeah, I was comfortable at that point being like, you're 2 hours from home. I'll have a chance to play. At that time, I think David Backus was already committed there, and you mentioned he was a Mr. Hockey finalist in 2002. So, also Travis Morin in class, he was right. He was committed there too. So it looked like a pretty decent forward group out of Minnesota. So I was like, yeah, absolutely, let's do it. So worked out really well for me.
Yep.
You ended up winning a Stanley Cup at the Anaheim Ducks in 2007. Now, you'll have to tell me how much you were playing, how much you weren't playing. But I want to ask specifically if you have any memories of the opening round series against the Minnesota Wild, because you guys took them out 4-1. Like I said, you might not even have played in the series. But do you remember anything about that series? I believe there was some, controversial hit on Kim Janssen, like a sucker punch. Derek Bougard circling on the ice. What do you remember about that series?
Well, yeah, that series set the tempo for Anaheim, Minnesota, and the rivalry for years to come. I think even was it 2003 that they had a pretty intense series too. So yeah, well, that specifically you're talking about, Mayday suckered Kim Janssen. There was like a little, I don't know, scuffle at the blue line. Mayday, everybody had a guy, and Mayday's tough. Brad Mayza, he was an easy cookie. So yeah. The league has also changed. I'll say this. Brad May was what you'd be considered like a light heavyweight back in the day, because he's not going to be able to fight and stand there and go toe-to-toe with Derek Bougard or some of these big guys. That's why Anaheim had George Parros, and guys like John Scott had jobs. If Brad May played today, he might be the toughest guy in the NHL. I think we can give that to Ryan Reeves right now. Ryan Reeves in the old days would be, in my opinion, maybe a light heavyweight, maybe even a middleweight, a tough guy nonetheless, but the game has changed. So point being, when Brad May hits Kim Janssen, that'd be like today the toughest guy in the NHL punching, let's see, who would it be? I don't know, Jared Spurgeon, right? So it was kind of a big deal. I think, yeah, took everybody off guard, kind of set the tone. But that's the way Anaheim wanted to play. They wanted to physically intimidate you. And Burke says he wants to run you over, seven-game series. He builds a team to make you want to quit. And we'll go seven games, and you're going to have to come through us. It's going to be tough. You're going to be sore. You're not going to like it. And eventually he believes that teams will they'll quit on him. So, but, yeah, that was cool. After that, though, the boogeyman took over. So the boogeyman followed through everybody on Anaheim. And we had guys. He took out Todd Fedoric. It went on and on. Trevor Gillies. Anaheim called up every guy we had. Sean Thornton. There was like probably four or five heavyweights in our organization, and he plowed through all of them.
We're talking with Ryan Carter, former Minnesota Wild player, now analyst for Fox Sports North. And let's talk about the Wild, Ryan, because they made some big kind of newsworthy stuff in the last week. Before we get to the trade, let's talk about Mikko Koivu, because you get to play with him in a Minnesota Wild uniform. What was he like as a teammate? Obviously, the news coming down that he's played his final game in a Minnesota Wild uniform.
Yeah, well, one, that's really sad. I think we knew that down the stretch here in the return to play that that was maybe going to be the case, or certainly that it was a possibility. So I tried to watch, having gone through that before, when it's your time, very rarely do you get to choose when you're no longer around, right?
Right.
And I think that illustrates the competitor in the guys. You know, like you still believe you can play. You still believe you want to be good. And don't get me wrong, I still believe Mikko Koivu has value, but it's tough and how you handle that. And I think he did a great job in the return to play. His attitude was good. I think he struggled accepting a role the first half of the year. You know, the captain, the leader, the guy that's usually out there in the power play to be leaned upon, is now playing second fiddle to a lot of guys. I think that he struggled with that. And the pause helped him, I believe, mentally get a hold of it and understand that, okay, if this team's going to be good, if we're going to win, I do need to accept a role, and I need to have a good attitude in that role. I think he came back and he did that. And I think that says a lot about him. But coming into this locker room, I had known. I played with Saku too. So I played with Saku first. I didn't know a lot about Mikko. Saku's intense, angry, plays hard. He's a little guy, but plays like he's got a big body, but really competes and really holds people accountable. I came in here with Mick, and he's younger, maybe a little bit, you know, a little bit more quiet than Saku, but still, he's a leader. He expects a lot of you all of the time. And the way he approaches the game, I think a lot of times he kind of gets razzed for being too serious, but that's the way he plays. That's the way he is. He wants to win. He wants to play hard. Certainly an honor to play with him. Both those brothers, you know, again, it's unfortunate because you don't get to pick when it's your time, but everybody's time does come.
You think he'll hang him up or try to catch on with another team or maybe go back to Finland and play? What have you heard? What do you think?
Well, I believe, you know, I think he's got gas left in the tank. I don't know where his heart is at. I've talked to him a handful of times since he's found out the news he won't be back. It doesn't come up like, are you going to play again? Or,
right,
you know, you don't kind of let guys take their own time. I believe at the deadline when he turned down the possibility of being traded, we don't know what happened behind the scenes, but he said, like, I don't want to work my no move. I want to stay here. I think to me that meant something, and he wanted to win here. And I don't think that just meant he wanted to try to make a playoff run and win here this year. I think he's proud to have played for the same organization, to have been the captain here. I don't see him starting off a training camp in 3 weeks or 4 weeks from now, whatever it might be, whenever they return, and wearing a different jersey. I think he's going to take some time. Now, I wouldn't rule out that maybe he'll play somewhere to stay in shape. And then if a team comes knocking that needs a fourth line center, somebody that they can deploy for faceoffs and make a deep playoff run, like a legit contender, he'd consider it. I do think he would consider it because, you know, winning, it's for me, again, this is the hardest part for me when I retired is it was I can't win anymore, right? Like, it's done. I don't have any more chances to win. That was it. I've done it my whole life. I've competed. I played. Now, one day it's over. And that's the hardest part.
Right.
the thought of maybe getting one more chance to win, I think might be enough to bring him back, but we'll see.
You talk about the captaincy, and this is something that fans have been clamoring for like 3-4 years now. They've done the old strip to see from Miko, blah, 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 and they always want to talk about who's the next captain. I've always felt like the actual captain and how much they control the locker room might be a little bit overrated. It's more kind of a leadership group as opposed to one guy. I kind of want to get your thoughts on what the meaning is of a captain in a locker room, and then let's then look at who you think on the Minnesota Wild roster could be the next captain.
Yeah, so for me, it's the guy that wants to play in the big spot, that does things the right way, that gets out of line when it's somebody else's turn, like does all of the right things for a team, inclusive. And I've played for and with a lot of different kinds of captains. Like Scott Niedermeyer, really quiet, reserved, comes into the room, just kind of does his own thing. Plays his own game, doesn't speak a lot, but when he speaks, like, you absolutely listen. And then all of a sudden he goes out there and plays, and he's on the ice for 5 straight minutes in OT, and he scores right. The game winner, and you're like, okay, now I get it. he wants to be that guy, but he wasn't like outgoing saying, I want that ice, give it to me. It's, I'm gonna go play. If the coach puts me out there, I'm gonna play my best, and I'm gonna do it. At no point would he ever be one of those guys that's in the locker room throwing a fit because he wasn't out there in that spot, right? In fact, he'd be the kind of guy that was like, hey, so-and-so young guy, it was cool that you got to be out there in that spot. Don't worry about the mistake you made, or good job doing this, you know? And to me, those are the personality traits. You make people around you better. You're not afraid to give up some of your opportunity for them because you have the confidence in yourself that when you get that chance, you'll play well. Really just a selfless person. And I think those are really the traits that you need in a captain, but also somebody that's plays big in big spots. And Scott Niedermeyer did that. I think that is very important, for guys to be able to show up in certain moments.
There's probably no clear cut favorite right now, probably to where do you think, well, I mean, you know, there's probably two or three guys, right, that people are talking about, whether it be Spurgeon or, you know, Foligno's name has been brought up, but you think Dean will name one right away, or kind of do what Jock did and rotate it for a while and see who emerges, or I guess maybe it'll depend what the team looks like too going into camp.
Yeah, I do believe things are going to change, but that, you know, going back to what I was saying before, I don't believe that being a captain should change the way you approach things.
Right.
I think you either do things a certain way, and then that gets you the C, not change who you are after you get it. I think the guys, you know, there are some guys in the locker room right now that maybe could be captains.
Yeah.
But I don't know if they're mature enough or disciplined enough not to let that change them.
Sure.
So, I don't know if this is just Dean Evason's decision either. I'm sure Bill Guerin, like, a captain dictates the direction of your culture, of your team, and hopefully it's not just for a year or two. You want it to be for a long time. That's right. I don't think you should give the C to somebody that's going to be there for a year or two and then maybe gone, right? Don't get me wrong. I think there are scenarios where that could be the case. But I think you want a foundational piece. And right now, who would it be? I'm not sure. If it was me, I can say this with confidence. If it was me, if I was the coach, if I had the decision, I wouldn't name a captain. I'd like to go in and see how people change, if they change the way they lead, if they're all of a sudden more vocal in the locker room, if you know, the things they're doing on the ice differs. And I want to see if they're trying to earn the C or if they're being authentic. And then at any point in time, if I found somebody that's being authentic, I would hesitate at no point to say, you're my guy, right?
Yeah. But
I don't think I would rush to replace Miko. I think he's also done a good job. I think he deserves a little bit of time. It's like the jersey retirement, right?
Right.
Where it's like, okay, No, I remember. I'll make light of this. Jordan Greenway wears 18. I wore 18. I text Tony DeCosta right away. I was like, "You couldn't even tell me. You couldn't even ask me. You get so much jersey right away 2 minutes later after I'm done." But it's similar. Like, you know, we're not going to give Miko's number out right away. I don't know that we need to give the C out right away. Just let it give itself out for a bit.
Well, and as Pat alluded to, who knows what the roster is going to look like a month or two from now. Trade last week, Eric Staal traded to the Buffalo Sabres. We get Ryan Johansson in return. I think I expected lots of changes, Ryan. I guess I didn't have Eric Staal on my radar or someone who was going to get moved. So how surprised were you that Eric Staal was the name that got sent away? And what do you think of Johansson in return in a Minnesota Wild uniform?
So I was surprised. I think I was probably more surprised at the timing. If you go back in history, there aren't a lot of trades being made, especially names like Eric Staal during the finals, right? Or just before the Stanley Cup finals. But Billy Guerin has alluded to that this year is so bizarre, that timing, teams want to make their teams. You don't know what it's going to look like. So they're making moves right now. So I was probably more floored by the timing. Is like, I was out here grilling a steak and all of a sudden Eric Staal traded. My wife says, "Is Eric Staal moving?" I was like, "No. I think you might want to check your phone." I was like, "What?" I was floored. It surprised and caught me off guard, especially when you consider that where the Wild need help is down the middle. And then you trade Eric Staal, who is one of your guys down the middle, right? So now you're down Staal and Koivu, two of your centers. And that was where you had some need, quite frankly. But when I think about it further, it makes sense. Like, Eric Staal had his opportunity here. He played good. I think he still is serviceable. He's a good player, but they tried that experiment and it didn't work, right? So some things do need to change eventually, and this is the hard part about sport. Eric Staal, the guy, great in the locker room, good person, still a good player, but that experiment didn't work. And I believe that Bill Guerin thinks that, like, that experiment didn't work. And I need to try a different experiment now. And there you get Johansson.
Well, you know, it's, you know, I mean, Eric, great guy. I mean, all the guys are really good guys, right? I mean, there's probably not a lot of bad guys in our game, right? I mean, most of them are all good guys. We get attached to them, fans do. But then, you know, you talk, but this team is old and slow. And, you know, so, I mean, you almost have to just separate it and look at what's going to be best for the organization moving forward. And I think we know, Ryan, that this team does need to get a little bit younger. It needs a little bit more skill, and it needs to get faster. Case in point, you watch the Vancouver Canucks and their top six guys with Pettersson, Besser, Horvat, Miller, you know, all guys with good speed, good skill. And if you're going to compete with those teams, you know, you better be able to match them.
Yeah, no, I agree. And again, I think the teams, they want to grow. They want these younger guys to grow. And how are they going to grow if they don't get opportunities? So Eric Staal is on the ice in key situations all the time. How can you expect a younger player to get better if he doesn't get to experience those situations, right? So I think that's another reason why you bring in somebody else, and now you get these young guys in. And there's going to be growing pains. There's no question. When you put young guys, inexperienced guys out there, there are growing pains, but they get better. And then their ceiling might be, you know, it rises, and they're going to get better and better. Then their floor rises. And I think that's part of it, too, is just there's only so much opportunity to go around. And in terms of production, a lot of it does come from just solely opportunity. And without getting it, these kids can't produce. But now clearing out some opportunity, there's real competition for quality ice, and we'll be able to see what these young kids can do.
And what did you think of the Johansson part of the trade then?
Well, I like it. He's a skilled guy. You know, I mostly remember him and know him from playing behind Alex Ovechkin. So he's a second power play unit kind of guy.
Right.
I think he had a good run with Boston there. Really the good. Short time he was there. So he brings a slightly different element. And I know he's always going to be compared to Eric Staal now because that's who he was traded for. I think he's got a little bit more east to west in his game than Eric Staal does. And sometimes I think they need that. The Wild were, I think for the most part, a straight line team. And if if you want to start scoring goals off the rush and create danger and move up and down the ice, I think you got to have guys that can go east and west, and you got to trust them to go east and west. Eric Staal is a very north-south kind of guy, so I'm curious to see how Johansson handles this, because in my opinion, he's one of those guys that he can go east and west, and he's got good vision. He's got pretty good hands, and if you get him with a guy like Kevin Fiala, maybe his game matches up a little bit better with Fiala than Eric Staal would. Just something to consider. And that's what I'm curious about, and that's what I'll watch. I also think he's good on the power play. He can run a half wall. Again, he played
great passer. Yeah, can really pass the puck.
Yeah, he's good. So I'm excited to see what he can do. Again, he's going to come here and he's going to get more opportunity than he's had anywhere else. So he's got a chance to grow as well.
Let's talk about some of the younger guys that you alluded to, not by name, but we asked Dean Evason this question a couple weeks ago, and he's intriguing. He is gritty. He chirps. I think you know who I'm talking about, and Eric Sinek. He got elevated and played, on the second line there in the playoffs for a while. His upside concerns me. I don't know. We've seen a lot of him, Ryan, and I don't know if he's going to slot in a top two role, a top six role. What do you see, or do you see enough where, he can develop his offensive game a little bit more?
I think he's really embraced, and I think you can tell in his mentality what he's had opportunity to play the offensive side of the game, and he's had opportunity to play the defensive, the shutdown side of the game. And right. It seems his personality and the way he likes to play gravitates towards that defensive side of the game. Mm-hmm. And I'll compare it to Jonas Brodin. He's such a good skater, and we all want him to contribute more offensively, but he's just a safer person. He wants to play safe hockey, and you can go up to him and you can say, bro, but you've got unbelievable skating abilities. Like, you can be the fourth guy jumping the play, and don't worry about giving up a two-on-one the other way, because you're the only guy in the back end that has the skates to catch back up to it and turn
it back. Right.
So go ahead and make that play. But he's still reluctant, right? And he's still reluctant to engage offensively and to activate and to do these things. Just his personality, right? Yeah. He doesn't want to play that way. I think X is the same way. He doesn't want to go east and west inside the blue line, turn the puck over. He wants to be safe. And so for that, I think, he can fill a spot up there in the top six. But I think if you're looking at a team that's really going to contend, he's probably your 3C right there, your third center slotted in there. You could play him at two and shut teams down. You're going to have to probably adjust the way that your team approaches a game from, a system standpoint. But I think if you're going to win, he's your third line center.
Well, yeah. I guess it might go back to what type of team do you want to be, right? If they're going to be not as offensive as a team, more systematic, kind of like they were, we knew how they could win, right, in the playoffs. They had to go four lines. They had to shut teams down and forecheck like crazy, to win games like they did in game one. So I think it's kind of a situation of what type of team do we want to be? Do we want to be more skilled and faster and, create more on the offensive side? And so I think that might really determine where he ends up in that pecking order.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. And to your point too, I think the team does need an identity. I don't know exactly what that's going to be or where they're going to go with it. I don't, but it needs an identity. And I do think that he'll be a part of that.
Well, you mentioned Jonas Brodin earlier, and he just signed a 7-year, $42 million contract extension. So now you have a lot of money tied up in four defensemen here, Ryan, and three of them have no moves, which come expansion time, which means they're going to, unless one of them waives their no move clause, that those three are going to be here after the expansion draft's over. So what does this mean for Matt Dumba's future? Do you think he's a trade candidate here, especially with the expansion coming up next year? Or are you a believer that you got to keep that core four together moving forward?
You know, so I'll say this. I like the acquisition of Nick Bjugstad, the big righty there. I think he's going to play the bumper spot on the power play. So I don't take this the wrong way, but think of Washington's power play. You've got TJ Oshie there in the middle, and you've got Ovechkin on that backside, right?
Yep.
TJ Oshie's so good there, and being a righty, you have to respect that because he gets the one-timer coming off that half wall too. So if you overshadow on Ovechkin, Oshie, he takes advantage of it.
Right.
Nick said coming in here, we haven't had a righty that's been good in that bumper spot to really help Dumbs back there on that power play, right? So Bjugstad has a phenomenal shot. And if he's that bumper and you can get him a couple of shots, their teams are going to have to respect that. And all of a sudden, that's going to open up Dumbs on the back door. Now, if Matt Dumba can get back to his old self where he's scoring these big goals and he's getting the shots, I mean, we know he likes to bring it. He still can shoot. I just don't think the quality of shots was there last year that it was in the past because there wasn't danger in the middle of the ice. Teams are going to have to respect that now if Nick Bjugstad can stay healthy and can get that shot off. And Dumbs is going to have an opportunity to say, hey, I'm worth every penny there and I'm not going anywhere. And if he is playing that way and if he can take advantage in the power play and do these certain things, that Dumb is not going anywhere. I think there's when you're building a team, there's a couple of things that are coveted. Obviously, everybody talks about the number one center, number one goaltender, your shutdown D-man. But you also, I'd say the fourth thing is a big right shot there on that power play. And if you got a D-man that can do it, that's like the fourth most critical piece, in my opinion. And Matt Dumba is that guy. And I don't know, Jared Spurgeon's good backing down up on that backside, but I think Matt Dumba's just a little bit more dangerous.
Ryan, we really appreciate your time today. I told you 15 to 20 minutes, and we kept going on and on and on with you. So I appreciate you spending your morning with us, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, sounds good. Yeah, lots of good stuff to talk about. So, I mean, yeah, it was great. Sorry to go a little long-winded, but appreciate seeing it. You guys.
All right, thanks, Ryan. Former Minnesota Wild forward Ryan Carter, and now analyst for Fox Sports North, doing a great job on the television side. And Pat, before we move on and chat with you, of course, why don't you tell us about one of our sponsors on Beyond the Pod? That would be Culturama.
Yes, Culturama. Having trouble getting brand recognition, media exposure, or promotion? Looking to find specialized tournament or event management services? At Culturama, they cultivate, collaborate, and connect you to new business strategies to maximize your organization's publicity through strategic brand development, multimedia creation, social media design, sponsorship, promotion, targeted marketing plans, or event management services. With over 20 years of experience, Culturama creative teams will guide you through a comprehensive plan to reach your brand goals. Follow, like, and subscribe to Culturama today to learn how to obtain a PR plan.
All right, thanks to Culturama for sponsoring Beyond the Pod. And, you know, last week we chatted, Pat, and then later that day after we had taped the podcast, that's when the Eric Staal-Ryan Johansson trade came down. And you brought up something with Ryan that I find to be interesting is, and this is, you know, judging off of calls from Wild fan line, this is judging off of social media, so I know this doesn't speak for the entire fan base. Sometimes maybe just the most vocal part of the fan base. Mm-hmm. But I always get the impression that people complain about certain elements of the team. They complain about, you know, forever we weren't physical enough, so we weren't going to be a good team in the playoffs because we weren't big and strong enough. And then we got size, and now we're not skilled enough, and now we're too old, and we have too much money tied up to these guys. And then when you finally trade some of those guys, people, you are right. I think people get attached to personalities. They get attached to, hey, I like Eric Staal as a person. I like him as a player. I don't want to see him go, as opposed to kind of detaching themselves from that and figuring what's best for the organization. When the Johansson Staal trade first came down, I felt like most people were critical of it. And I liked it. And I know you look at stats and Eric Staal has more goals and he has more assists, but when you look at the age, when you look at the style of play in terms of just those kind of guys kind of slow down, you got a Fiala on your team, you want to play with pace when you got Fiala out there.
Right.
And you can't have slow centers. We've had that with Staal and Mikko. And, you know, I'm not saying Ryan Johansson is going to be a number one center, but I've always liked the skill. I've liked his playmaking. He can play with some speed. He can play with some pace. I think he'll be able to help guys like Fiala on the rush. I like the deal. And even if it doesn't work out, it's a one-year deal. Eric Staal had 1 year left on his deal. It wasn't going to happen here with Eric Staal.
No.
So even if it fails with Ryan Johansson, you're no worse for the wear.
Without a doubt. And listen, if this team lost in the first round, they may have not made the playoffs had it been a normal season. They may have, you know, we don't know for sure. But the bottom line is, you've got to get better. And Billy Guerin came right out and said, do you want me to stay status quo? He's trying to win, and he's trying to change things up. And he knows, you know, I think, were they the oldest team in the league or second?
They're up there, yeah.
You know, they're, well, you know, whatever, top five. And they've got to get younger. They've got to get faster. They got to get more skilled. And you know, I read the same comments you did. Geez, are we in a complete rebuild? No, but you're retooling and you're getting younger. And listen, people talk a lot about the left wing, right wing, center. I'm all about acquiring talent.
Yep.
If you get that talent, you can make the pieces work. I don't care what, if you're, you know, an original, just a left winger or whatever. The guy has played some center, right? He played in Washington. Maybe he hasn't succeeded there. I still think, Brandon, in my opinion, that even though there are a bunch of left wingers now and, you know, he's got to be slotted at center. He's slotted at center now. My guess and my I'm going to go on record by saying he will be a left winger once the season starts, because I do not think Billy Guerin is done. I think there's a couple guys who do shoot left-handed who you can figure it out for yourself.
Sure.
Going to be are not going to be part of the organization come training camp. And
yep.
So I just think there's going to be a couple more moves made before we start the season.
Yeah, Greenway could be traded. Parisi could be traded. So there could be a left wing spot opening up. And you bring up the point of, you know, if you are one player away from winning a Stanley Cup and you need that specific fit, then yeah, to me, that's when you got to go with, hey, we need that right shot that can be the bumper in the middle of the power play. Right. When you're that one guy away, the Wild are not in that situation, which is always what drives me crazy about the NHL draft, which is coming up here in a couple of weeks, where people do the, especially when you're drafting as high as number nine. Well, we need this fit in our organization.
Yeah.
No. You need as much talent as you possibly can. You need to get assets.
Yes.
And then once you're close to becoming a Stanley Cup team, then you can rearrange your assets. And hey, if we're strong at the wing position, we can trade a wing and get a defenseman. Or if we're in need of a goalie, we can get that goalie at a later point. To me, you just need to get as many assets and draft the best player you potentially can.
And I'm gonna bring you right to the Tampa Bay Lightning. Because Andre Vasilevsky was the pick of the Tampa Bay Lightning, right? And he stayed another 2 years over in Russia before he came here. And yep, look at where they are now, right? Look at where they are now. And I'm not saying you draft the Russian goalie if he's available. If you like him and if you think he is that good, then you take him there. You know, is it ideal to pick a goalie that high? You know, maybe not, but you know what? If you think in 2 years he's going to be your number one goalie for the next 10, something to think about.
Yes. Well, and that brings up a point I want to talk about, the NHL draft pack, because I've done even further research, and
I'm impressed.
I was on the Marco Rossi bandwagon before, and I said, well, I'm going to keep doing more research, and my opinion might change at some point. Sure. I am still, as of September 23rd, with 2 weeks to change my mind, I'm still on the Marco Rossi bandwagon. I don't think he's going to fall to you at number nine.
Mm-hmm.
To me, two things here. One, I would move up to number five and make sure you get him. And you already have the nine pick, so it's not like you have to give up a ton of assets to move up to five from nine. To me, it's doable. I think he's a cornerstone center. I don't care about his size. I just think the skill and the smarts is there, and he's electric. And so to me, I would move up to get him. Now, that being said, Pat, if we don't move up and Rossi's gone and Perfetti's gone, who's another center, who I'm kind of lukewarm on. Other people seem to be higher on him than from what I've seen.
Sure.
You mentioned the goalie. If Askarov is available at nine, I think there's some – and because I kind of think there's a drop-off after him.
Sure.
You know, so if the Wild aren't able to move up, there's kind of like a group of 10, 12 guys that are all kind of the same.
Yep.
And Askarov is kind of that one piece that either, A, you could draft yourself and kind of have your cornerstone goalie, Or two, and I know Wild fans are going to like to hear this because it's not often we draft in the top 10. If Askarov is still there, I think there are some teams that might be willing to give up a lot to move up to get him, like an Edmonton, who's at 14.
Right.
A Carolina, who I think is at 12 or 13. I do think there's a scenario where you might be able to get some added prospects or some added talent to your team.
Yep.
To move back 4 or 5 spots where you can still get, to me, you're going to get a comparable player if you're dead set on not going the goalie route, or if you're going to get a goalie in free agency.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. Now, let me ask you, because I don't know off the top of my head, do you know who picks at number 5?
I believe that is Ottawa. I think that's their second. I think they have 3 and 5.
And so Ottawa, you know, I don't know if Minnesota likes anybody on Ottawa, but you could put a package together to get that number 5 pick, include another player, and make it a blockbuster if you really wanted to.
Sure.
Or move up even higher, you know, at 2 to get Byfield or you know. So I think every scenario for this team has got to be examined and looked at and any possible way to improve your team.
So I'm on the Marco Rossi bandwagon.
I would
be extremely happy if the Wild were to somehow get him. Yeah. A couple more topics, but I'll talk about SodaStick first. go to SodaStick.com and get your original Minnesota sports inspired goods. They just launched their partnership with Michelob Golden Light for the Mick Golden Light Pond Hockey Club merch line. The logo features a Paul Bunyan looking hockey dude cheersing a beer. They've got it on shirts, hoodies, hats, and more. If you haven't seen it yet, you got to check it out. We're going to hook you up with free shipping on your order. Just use the code KFN for free shipping. That is SodaStick.com, original Minnesota sports inspired goods, code KFN for free shipping. I did want to talk to you about the 2020-2021 season, which just might be 2021 season, Pat. Originally, it sounded like they were kind of set for a December 1st start. Now it looks like they might push it back to late December, or even January. And I'm just trying to figure out, how are we ever going to get this back to being on our original schedule? You know, because once you're starting in December, now you're going back through to August and September again.
Yeah.
Unless you pack all these games together, which I don't know if that's a good idea to try to shorten up the season. The commissioner, Gary Bettman, said he wants to do an 82 game season. He wants to do a full playoffs for next year. So if you're going to do that and not shorten the season, how are we ever going to get this back to October through June schedule? Cause I just think July, August, and even September for Stanley Cup is not a great idea moving forward.
No, I don't either. Really, the only way you do it, and I think, you know, I think that's the hope, that they can play an 82 game schedule, and you know, all, you know, everything that he is saying right now, because he's certainly not going to give up, you know, his chips in terms of dealing with the NHLPA and those type of things. I think in reality, Brandon, I think we're going to see a 60 game season. I don't believe that we're going to see the season starting until at least January. And then there's things to figure out. The unfortunate thing about the National Hockey League is that they don't have a television contract like the NBA does, like the NFL does, and like Major League Baseball does. And that plays a significant part in the success of these leagues.
They need attendance.
They need people in the stands, you know, with the way things are right now and what they're projecting might be a tough fall and winter, as far as this virus, I think it's going to be really, really difficult to get people back into stadiums and they need that. And so I think there will be a season, but I just don't see it being a full 82 game schedule, and they got to protect the players too. And I know I've read some stuff, it's been talked about a little bit about having a bubble again and to start the season. It works. We know that it works, but,
the entire season is difficult.
Yeah. And you can't, I don't think you could do it for a full season. I don't think the players would agree to it.
And so it, there's a lot of difficult questions that have to be answered.
I'm all on board with a 60-game season. I've basically thought that all of these sports, other than the NFL, their seasons are way too long. 162 games in baseball,
yeah,
82 in the NBA and NHL. I know why they do it. It's for money, and they want to make as much money as possible. But to me, when they've had kind of like the lockout shortened seasons where it's 48 games, 50 games, I love those seasons.
And well, yeah.
I like the 60-game Major League Baseball season. Every game meant much more.
You know what you get out of it, Brandon? You get intensity every night because you know every game is so important. Not that it's not during a regular 82, but boy, during a shortened season that you can't afford to lose three in a row. You know, you've got to be on your game, and I think the entertainment value is better for the fans, for all of us, for broadcasters, we'll see. Let's hope that they're able to start in January. I mean, that's still not 100%. So
yeah.
You know, we'll see how it shakes out.
A couple topics we didn't get to last week because we ran out of time, and we're basically running out of time already today. So I don't know if we're going to get to them all, but one specifically last week, Paul Martin, former Gopher defenseman, they announced that he's going to join the Gophers as an undergraduate assistant. You know, at one point, this was a college program, Pat, that was just turning out NHL defensemen, and Paul Martin was one of them. And I feel like it's been kind of a little bit of a while since they've had one of those mainstay defensemen.
Without a doubt. And let's talk about Paul for a second. He's a very unique individual. I mean, he could have played college football, Division I college football. He's a great athlete. He is so unassuming in his character, just a well-liked guy, a professional, doesn't think he's bigger than he is, even though he could be, you know, because this guy will go down as one of the best athletes ever to come out of Minnesota. He was just that good of an athlete. So I really think he's going to add a lot to the program. He's going to be helpful to the young kids, who will really learn how to become a pro, how to become not only, you know, a pro athlete, but a pro person, and how to act. And I think he's a great addition to the staff. So really, really, really happy for Paul.
Also last week, Peter Laviolette agreed to a 3-year deal as the head coach of the Washington Capitals. Two-part question here, Pat. What in the heck happened that they decided they couldn't come in an agreement with Barry Trotz after winning a Stanley Cup? What a colossal mistake that was.
Yep.
And then two, what are your thoughts on NHL just recycling these coaches? It seems like Peter Laviolette, out of all of them, just gets recycled over and over and over again.
Yeah, well, Brandon, every time someone's fired, we read the paper the next day. Well, it's going to be one of five. And we could name those five without even looking at the paper.
Yeah.
I hope we start to see guys get more of an opportunity. I know it's always safe to bring in a guy who's got experience, but you know what? You get fired for a reason, right? You get fired for a reason. And now this is what Peter's third or fourth team, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Philadelphia, Nashville. Who else am I missing?
Carolina.
Yep. Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
Not that he's a bad coach or,
no,
you know, or anything like that. But, you know, it's kind of the old boy network to a certain degree.
Yeah.
And, good luck to Peter and, you know, congrats to him. But on to Barry Trotz. Yeah. A colossal mistake. Right. I mean, look what he has done. I mean, talk about a guy. He kind of reminds me a little bit of a Scotty Bowman type, where he commands what's going to happen in that room on the ice. And if you don't like it, I don't care. I'm the coach. This is the way it's going to be. And he got the Islanders, a team that if you look on paper, you know, you would say, you know, not the greatest assembly of personnel, you know, top to bottom. No real superstar per se.
They lost their superstar and played better.
Right.
Yeah.
And so he gets them to play all the same way. They each have a role. They know it. They do it. And if you don't, or stray away from the concept of the team, you're not going to play. And he's not afraid to do that. And so, and look what he did for Ovechkin, to finally get Ovechkin to buy into all parts of the game, that even if it was the simplest thing, skate hard to the bench, that made an impact on the rest of the guys instead of just lollygagging, you know, at the end of a shift. It made a difference. And they could have paid him another $4 million and, you know, would have been well worth it to me.
Yeah. Yeah. He got Alexander Ovechkin to block shots, which one, helps your team on the ice. And two, as you mentioned, it helps the psyche of the team. When the guy who scores 50 goals a year is out there blocking shots, to me, that's contagious with the rest of the team.
No doubt.
Pat, we'll talk to you again next week. Appreciate your help as always.
Look forward to it. Thanks, Brandon.
All right. He's Pat Micheletti. I'm Brandon Molesky. This has been another episode of Beyond the Pod. Thank you so much to Culturama and SodaStick, sodastick.com. You can get free shipping by using the code KFAN when you go to sodastick.com. Appreciate their sponsorship of the Beyond the Pod podcast. We'll talk to you next week right here on Beyond the Pod.